That's what I like to tell a lot of people. It's like you have a backup plan for your backup plan, because things change daily and even hourly, you know. So you've got to really have some backup plans and leave your options open on where you're going to hunt and how you're going to hunt and all that. So, you know, if you're hunting in some thicker timber, like, you know, above in that 8,000-9,000 foot elevation stuff, mm-hmm. you really can't glass long distances. So, you know, you'll be using your optics and your boots. Whereas, you know, in some of that more open country down in the pinyon junipers, you might be able to sit in one spot, you know, all day and glass
miles, yeah.
in a 360. So, you know, a lot of times when you find those unpressured bulls like that, they'll be out in more open areas sometimes, so they will be a little easier to find, I find, you know. They'll be out in the open on those south-facing slopes, which, you know, you got the sunshine on a big bull elk out in the open. There's nothing easier to glass up, you know. You know, the predators, you know, lions like to move around when it's windy. That's the best time for them to hunt, as well as it's just uncomfortable when it's cold on those animals.
Hey guys, before we get into this next episode, I want to share a couple things with you. First, I am happy to announce the new daysinthewild.com is finally launched. Everything is in one place: my guide services, the podcasts, access to my blogs, etc. So go check it out, daysinthewild.com. If you've been following the show lately, you know that we've partnered with Bushnell and Primos. The awesome thing about that is that if you use promo code STL02, you will save 15% on anything they sell. It doesn't have to be the stuff that I use. I've been using the Bushnell trail cameras for years. I did a couple of reviews over the years, and Bushnell always came out on top. They're excellent. And I know you've heard me talk about Primo's calls and how good they are, but I've also been using their ground blinds, and they're awesome. I don't know if you remember Double Bull blinds, but that's a Primo's product now, or has been for a while. I also tried out a set of their shooting sticks, and for standing shots, or, you know, using for clients when we're predator hunting, or my kids that need it when we're spot and stalk and have to get in close on javelina or anything like that. It's like a really good tool. I love them. They're quick setup and they're steady. Lastly, do yourself a favor and go check out the lineup of shooting bags, glassing pads, and other accessories that Phoenix Shooting Bags puts out. Go to phoenixshootingbags.com, use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and save 20%. Rifle season is upon us, guys. You'll thank me later, I promise. Go check them out. Hey, don't forget to give us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It helps me keep bringing you guys content for free. It definitely helps out our ratings and reach more people. So thanks again for taking care of that. Appreciate it. Now let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast. Today we're going to talk late season elk hunting. That's coming up hot. We're getting part of November here. A lot of the late season elk hunts are kind of coming in. I know Arizona, where, you know, our bull hunt starts day after Thanksgiving. So I got Clint Hamblin on with us. Clint guides for Steve Chapel, and he does a lot of elk hunts. And he's been elk hunting, and he lives in elk country, and so he's got some good information for us here. What's going on, Clint?
Hey, John.
So hunt's coming up hot, man. You all set?
Yeah, we're all set. Kind of wait and see what this weather does. It seems like the last couple of years, it changes right before the season starts, so it kind of changes your...
Right. The elk aren't where you found them.
yeah, they move a little bit, and also just, you know, trying to be safe and access different areas and stuff like that. So,
yeah, last year was a doozy for us. We, I was helping out my cousin, actually, in 7 West, and we couldn't access any of it. You needed a snowmobile. It was just... I had all these spots picked out like 2 weeks prior to the hunt. Found a couple of really good bulls. Even him, he went up one day with my dad, found a big old bull. We couldn't even get to any of those spots unless we wanted to hike in knee-high snow for about 7 miles, and I don't know anybody that wants to do that. So,
yeah, especially us Arizona guys that really aren't used to that kind of weather that often, you know?
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Well, it's also, then if you shoot one, getting it back out, you know.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, and the last thing you want to do is, especially if you have a client or something, you get stuck out somewhere, and we're in a lot of problems doing that too. So gotta be safe.
Yeah, my nephew had a 5B tag, and so we had the same problem up there. But I had some areas, got him in on a bull. Unfortunately, he missed, but that was tough too because I had, you know, I had a lot of areas that we had pretty originally pre-scouted and found, you know, good opportunity areas. And it's just, you know, like you said, the weather comes in and changes. So you have to have a plan B all the time, I think, for these hunts.
Oh, yeah. That's what I like to tell a lot of people. It's like you have a backup plan for your backup plan because things change daily and even hourly, you know. So you've got to really have some backup plans and leave your options open on where you're going to hunt and how you're going to hunt and all that. So,
yep. Real quick, give us a little rundown about yourself, and then we'll get to some of these questions.
Yeah, so like you said, I guide elk hunts here in Arizona for Steve Chappell. You know, I've been hunting here in Arizona my whole life. I was born here, and actually I'm a third generation from Arizona here. So I killed my first big game animal when I was 10, and
nice.
I'm 47 now, so that was a long time ago. But yeah, I just felt like everybody else, I guess. I'm fortunate to have, have my dad took me at a really young age. And once I was introduced, it was like no looking back, you know. So
that's awesome.
Just love Arizona, you know, almost all public land. So, you know, we can get away from hunters. And I just really like the style of hunting here as far as we do a lot of glassing and big open country, you know. And so, yeah, I really love Arizona and love hunting here.
Awesome. So late season bull hunts, let's talk about what you're looking for in a unit first. Let's, you know, talk about like strategy as to getting a tag and what you're looking for in a unit. And then we'll kind of look at where you start in that unit.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of the units are different as far as like the terrain, and some units are a little flatter and rolling hills, and then you've got some units with big, deep canyons and, you know, areas like that. So as far as like locating an area, I guess the first thing is kind of to know what these bulls do and what they're looking for after the rut. And, you know, once it's over, you know, it is the bulls are just thin and exhausted, and they're looking for a secluded area where they can go and feed up and recover, you know, from the long, hard rut. So I guess the first thing I look for is, you know, areas that where I can get away from pressure from people, because that's what the elk are looking for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I try to look over the maps and find where all the access points are and start looking for those canyons and, you know, see where water is, find where the historic, you know, some historic burns are or thinned out areas, and just start going and checking some of those areas out and seeing, you know, go in there and see if there's some sign and see if those elk are hanging around in there, especially bulls, you know, I mean, the bigger bulls, because a lot of times they'll be either by themselves or real small bachelor groups, you know, but yeah, they're just seeking out those real secluded areas and getting away from pressure, because they've been, you know, pressured for the whole month of September, getting chased around and chasing cows, and they're just wanting some peace and quiet, you know.
Right. Let me run this by you and see if you agree with me or not. In years past, when I had a lot more time on my hands and wasn't married and had kids and all that, I would go out and look for elk in like beginning of February, you know, or end of January if I was tagged out or whatever with the deer, or sometimes even in December, you know, before the archery deer hunt when I didn't have a tag, a rifle tag or something like that. And I would go look for elk and find where bulls are at that time of year, even into March sometimes. You know, of course, now that March, they don't have horns and it's harder to tell what's a bull and what's not. But I mean, you could tell. It's easier than deer, in my opinion. But going out there and finding where they are at that time of year and then putting in for those units or those areas to draw a rifle tag, a late rifle tag, because they're typically going to be back in those areas.
Yeah, that's a great strategy to use because it'll be in the same place, you know, until it starts warming up and, you know, late spring. Yeah, that's a very good strategy to use. And of course, the late bull tags are a lot easier to draw. So if you have a good idea, even though those late hunts can be really difficult to find elk, once you start establishing where those elk are at, you know, it's a great option for, you know, a second choice to find, once you find those bulls, you get back in there again that late fall, and they'll be in the same areas, you know?
Yeah, you find that once you find a spot that holds bulls at that time of year, year after year, there's always going to be bulls in there.
Yeah, I mean,
for the most part.
Generally, yeah. But, you know, conditions are so different each year. It's like, just like this year compared to last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know how the early hunt went.
Oh, yeah.
Rain and everything. Yeah. So who knows what's going to change between now and, you know, a few more weeks when this late hunt starts up. But, you know, some years you'll find bulls in those pockets and stuff. And then other years, maybe there's no water there. Maybe, you know, the feed's a little different. Maybe some other hunters that, you know, hunted in there for 4 or 5 years, and all of a sudden a group of hunters shows up in there, and they've hunted in there before and have put some pressure on them. So,
right.
But most generally, yeah, that's a great strategy is to find, if you find those bulls, like you said, when you have time to get out there and look around, you know, in January, February, and, you know, into March, you know, that's a very good starting point. And you'll usually find those elk back in the same spot, you know, after the rut's over.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's probably one of the main things is, especially on more mature bulls, you know, is just getting away from that pressure. Most of us kind of have an allergy for other hunters. You know, we like that solitude anyway. So,
right.
Yeah.
So, once you've, you know, decided where you're going to hunt, what are some of these, like, you know, give me like a hierarchy of things of like terrain features or habitat, vegetation, whatever it is that you're looking at. You know, it's a rule of thumb, obviously, because they can live wherever the hell they want to be, but where you typically like to focus your, you know, your efforts on, because you know you're more than likely going to find elk and that stuff.
Yeah, so depending, you know, normally, but this kind of depends on the unit too, you know, because a lot of the elk in Arizona stay at some of that higher elevation, some of the higher elevation points, you know. So, I mean, some of these bulls will stay up there at, you know, 9,000 feet as long as there's not a really deep snow.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of times if I get hunted in an area like that, you know, I'll look for those burned out areas, you know, with some thick cover where they can get in some thick cover next to some burn areas, especially on, you know, south facing slopes where it's a little warmer and might get some more, you know, the snow doesn't stick around as long, and, you know, there's usually some greener growth popping up through there, got some more feed. And then down, you know, if you get down into the pinyon juniper country, you know, I just start looking into those drainages that have a lot of thick trees and, you know, try to find a high point. You know, you want to cover a lot of country. So if you get into a spot like that where you can cover a lot of country through binoculars, then, you know, that's the key there. Whereas if you're hunting up in the higher elevations, you might have to, you want to cover a lot of country still, but you might have to work a ridge line and be able to glass into different pockets and just keep moving down a ridge line. But I guess the key too is to cover a lot of country, you know, because those bulls, if they find a spot that's, you know, away from pressure and it's secluded, they won't move. So, you know, you really need to cover a lot of country in order to find those bulls.
And when you say cover country, you mean with glass or just putting miles on boots or putting miles on the truck or what?
Yeah.
All the above?
Pretty much all the above. I mean, you have to it kind of depends on the area. Like, you know, if you're hunting in some thicker timber, like, you know, up above in that 8,000-9,000 foot elevation stuff,
mm-hmm.
you really can't glass long distances. So, you know, you'll be using your optics and your boots. Whereas, you know, in some of that more open country down in the pinyon junipers, you might be able to sit in one spot, you know, all day and glass
miles, yeah.
in a 360. So, but then also, yeah, even in a truck though, it's like you want to have several different spots. You know, you don't want to go into an area and just be focused and committed to one area, because I'm sure you've been disappointed many times you get in there and there's either other hunters or the animals aren't there, and it's like, well, now what do I do, you know? So having those backup areas and getting in there early and having backup areas so that if something goes awry, then boom, you got plan B, and if plan B is not there, then boom, you got plan C, and you never miss any time, you know?
Right. Yeah, so, there's nothing worse than like that sense when you're like flailing, when you don't know what to do. Like, you know, when the plant goes out the door and you're like, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I think that comes about a lot more when you're guiding. Like, I feel like you got a little bit extra pressure on you that if your plan A doesn't work and you go to plan B and it's not working out and you're like, okay, now what am I going to do? But yeah, it's important. I think it's important that you definitely have options. Options is always good. It could also be a bad thing too, because I know for myself that when I have a lot of options, like for instance, if I have like five tree stands set up, you're like, okay, which tree stand do I sit on? You know, or you know, whatever.
Right, it's yeah, like, exactly.
And then you're sitting in one, you're not seeing anything. You're like, oh, I knew I should have sat over there, or you know, it's like that kind of situation. You know, that it could work against you for sure. But it's definitely good to have a hierarchy of backup plans. And
I just went through that on the coos deer hunt. You got all these areas to hunt, and like you said, you start thinking, well, do I go here? Do I go there? It's pretty much a flip of the coin, because you know how it is. Sometimes it's just you got to have a little luck and be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
But even though you have, you know, several areas that you know there's deer in or elk, you know, or whatever. But yeah, sometimes it's a juggling act trying to figure out. But I'd rather do that though than, like you said, go to a spot and go, oh, now what do I do? You know?
Exactly.
And not have another spot to go to. So yeah, and that goes with time too. You know, like, in the last few years, so you have 7 days to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Then you break that down to like the real actual prime time when you're more than likely to see an animal is, you know, it's the first couple hours after daylight,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, last couple hours before it gets dark. So now you're looking at 4 hours a day, and you got 7 days. So you break that down. It's like, you don't want to really be wasting any of that prime time in such a short period of time. You know, you've been waiting.
Yeah,
you know, especially when you're guiding somebody, some of these out, you know, these non-residents and stuff, they've been waiting forever.
Yeah,
exactly. Forever to get a tag, and it's like this is their once in a lifetime hunt, you know. So you want to really go out and make sure that you give them the best opportunity that you can, and you know, I'm real big on if I know the elk are like a half a mile in or something,
mm-hmm.
I'll be sure that I go in that half a mile in the dark,
yes,
or real early in the afternoon. So I'm I don't want to, you know, you don't want to spook any animals out, but you want to be really close to where you think the animals are
before daybreak. Yep.
Yeah, that prime time, you know. You know, every year you hear guys, you'll be up on top of a hill ready to go and waiting for it to get light. And, you'll hear guys coming down the road half an hour after daylight, you know, and it's like they're wasting valuable time, you know.
Yeah, I can never understand hunting with people, and I'm like up an hour and a half before, you know, daylight, and I'm getting ready, and everybody's like, "What are you doing up so early?" And this, and I'm like, I feel like I'm like everybody's dad. I'm like, "Come on, man, let's go, come on, let's get out there."
Yeah, you know? It's like a kid on Christmas morning, right?
The early bird gets the worm, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a good point. It's good to hear somebody else say it. I'm not the only I'm not the only crazy guy out there.
But, that's right.
So let's talk a little bit about the bull behavior and like what do you expect to see movement wise? I know you kind of said, you know, the last 2 hours of light, but what are these bulls doing throughout the day? Are they, you know, laying down all day long? Are they getting up and feeding in the day? You know, trying to pack on some back of that weight before the, you know, winter hits? What do you see out there?
Yeah, so, you know, it kind of depends on the age of the bull too, you know. I noticed the the younger bulls, you know, they'll wander around a lot looking for some company, you know, they'll join up in with those herds of cows, and they just seem to wander around a lot. You know, they'll travel several miles wandering around. Well, they're usually the ones that, you know, that's most of the bulls that get killed are those bulls for that reason. You know, they're moving around a lot. So, you know, these older mature bulls, you know, from what I find, they really hold up in these just areas that people won't, they don't want to go into. I mean, for one thing, it's hard to get into, but then to get one out of there is, you know how it is. It's a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times when you find those unpressured bulls like that, they'll be out in more open areas sometimes, so they will be a little easier to find, I find, you know. They'll be out in the open on those south-facing slopes, which, you know, you got the sunshine on a big bull elk out in the open. There's nothing easier to glass up, you know. So I notice the ones that are unpressured, they tend to get up more maybe in the middle of the day and feed. They might lay down instead of going into the real thickets, you know. If they're feeling comfortable, they'll maybe bed down where you can spot them. You know, maybe even glass them up. But yeah, they most of the time, though, it's that early morning and just before dark. You know, those bigger bulls really get nocturnal that time of year. Quite a few years ago, I had a late archery bull hunt,
mm-hmm.
and it was pretty dry. So I found a water hole that was pretty high up on the side of this mountain. So I went in there, and I could oversee a lot of country and a couple of canyons that go down through there.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, I'm going to take my tripod, my binoculars in there, and sit here and do some glassing to, you know, waste time sitting on the water hole.
Right.
So there wasn't much track on that water hole. There was it looked like only maybe one bull was coming in there. This was before, you know, trail cameras became so popular, we used to have to check tanks for track.
Yeah,
that seemed like a long time ago, but anyways, I was glassing across this into this canyon. About half a mile away, I saw a bull, and he was really nice bull, about 340 bull, which is nice for this area. So I watched him for about an hour, and he didn't move probably 10 yards, just fed in the same spot. So then I thought, all right, you know, eventually it was the only water around. I thought, you know, I got a few days to hunt here. I'm gonna just hunker down. That bull's going to come in eventually. So next day I got in there, and same thing, you know, a couple hours before it got dark, I glassed across there, and he was in the same exact spot. Hadn't moved 20 yards.
Oh, wow.
So I had one more day to hunt. So I went back in the next afternoon, and I didn't see him over there in that same spot. But right at dark, he popped out about 200 yards away. And so I sat there and watched him. He just stood there until it got completely dark, and then he came on in. I never left out of my blind.
Uh-huh.
He came on in there, and I could hear him. I couldn't see him. You know, I could just see a little. I knew he was in there, but I could hear him drinking.
Oh, wow.
At about 18 yards, and it was just pitch black. You know, I didn't want to spook him, so I didn't want to get out of there. Next day, I went in there, and he was right back over on the same exact spot again.
Wow.
And never did kill that bull. But so I figured out that they really get nocturnal. If they have to go to water, especially, you know, they'll travel a mile and they'll go right back to that same spot again. So that's when I really started realizing that these bulls, when they find a spot that nobody's messing with them, they'll really hunker down there. They'll stick to it, yeah.
Right. They're going to get up. They're not, when you say nocturnal, it's not their movements, their traveling's nocturnal. But they're still getting up and feeding. They're just pooping, shitting, sleeping, eating literally in the same 100-yard square all day long.
Exactly, yeah.
What's going on, yeah.
Yeah.
I've witnessed that too. I've had that late archery tag three times. I've tagged out twice. And I've been fortunate enough to tag out twice.
Yeah, that's a tough hunt. You're really relying on sitting water a lot of times, you know. You can still spot and stalk, but...
Yeah, I did spot and stalk. I treated them like big deer. Okay, I was just like, you know what? This is a big deer. I'm not going to, you know, I can't call them. I can't do any of that. I don't know that water is going to be good, because the first year we had plenty of snow, and I didn't know. To me, it didn't feel like water was good. But I found out later on, years later, that really doesn't matter. They still come to the water. When I started using marked trail cameras, I figured that out. So I always go back to this hunt, my very first late archery elk hunt. I always remember this, the one takeaway from it was, we got out there, I went 3 days, I didn't see a freaking elk. And I had ran some cameras, I had mineral licks out, I had all this activity, I thought I had it all dialed in, you know? And then we had this crazy big snowstorm came in, and all my stuff was way up on the mountain, and I could see, you can glass up just lines of elk tracks coming straight off the mountain, like they just dumped off the mountain. And they were down in the lower stuff, you know? So I got into the lower stuff, and I was glassing and glassing and glassing. It was so windy. Windy and cold, like you wouldn't believe, for like 3-4 days. Super windy. And then it dawned on me, like, these elk, they want to be out of the wind. So I started just wherever the wind was blowing, I would turn and put the glasses straight into the wind. Wouldn't you freaking know it? The second I started doing that, I started picking up elk.
Right. That's a great point.
And that stuck with me forever. And I, of course, I applied that to deer and everything else. Like, you know, when you get those really, especially when it's cold, you know, and the wind makes a big difference.
Oh, yeah. You know, the predators, you know, lions like to move around when it's windy. That's the best time for them to hunt, as well as it's just uncomfortable when it's cold on those animals. So there's several reasons. But, yeah, that like you said, the bad part is you have to you got to put your face right into that cold wind, but that's what you got to do. You know?
Oh, yeah. It's brutal. So, it's absolutely brutal. But, I was rough, you know, and that my gear wasn't nearly as technical as it is now. But, you know, we made it through. I shot a bull, you know, nothing crazy, like 270, but, you know, I was happy. Late season tag. I put in for that tag by accident. I transposed a number or something, and I drew that tag. And when I saw that I drew, I was like, oh, I drew. And then I'm like, oh, I didn't put
it. What did I draw? Yeah.
But
yeah. So, to make the best of whatever you draw. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I had it in 2016. I had that tag as well, but I did it on purpose for that one. And I shot a decent bull right around 300. But yeah, you know, very similar stuff you're talking about. What about, let's say, like when you're hunting like a unit 9 where everything's just freaking flat and, you know, there's really not a lot of vantage points, you can't utilize optics. What are some of the things that you're doing in that, you know, that type of scenario?
Yeah, you really have to start going and looking for sign, you know, especially after, if there is a fresh doe, you know, try to get in there. And the problem is, you know, you want to be able to determine if it's a herd of cows or young bulls, or, you know, if you go along and you start seeing some bull track and it's like, oh, there's only, it looks like there's a couple out here.
Yeah.
You know, but it's definitely harder hunting in areas like that. I think the success rate is lower than 9 than it is in areas where you can use your optics, you know. And there's some spots in unit 9 where you can use your optics, but
yeah, but it's everybody and their mom's going to be there too.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the problem with having limited areas like that to glass from. Because really, I mean, you know how it is. That second hunt, your optics are just about as important as your weapon.
Right.
You know? I mean, you just about have to have optics to find them. And,
yeah, I'd rather leave my boots at home than my binos.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yep.
So, I prefer to hunt more rugged country. You know, I like stuff that's a little more vertical.
Yeah,
it makes it easier to find. It's just, you know, when you start getting a little older, it's a little tougher to get in and out of that country, especially if you have to pack an animal out. But
yeah,
you just have to keep trying, you know, keep in shape.
Now, in areas that where you just got like miles and miles and acres of ponderosa, and there's not a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of areas where you can actually glass, are you like still hunting through and just kind of, you know, because a lot of times when you have a lot of thick ponderosa, you got a pretty open understory. You can see underneath the trees, you know, a couple hundred yards or whatever. But
yeah, that's good country to still hunt in. I mean, there's really no other way you can hunt that. You just still hunt, you know, go 100 yards and just really keep your eyes up. You want to be able to make sure you spot them before they spot you. But you know, sometimes you can cut track. I've tracked bulls before. It's probably not wouldn't be my favorite number one way to hunt elk, but if it came down to it, it's definitely a tactic you can use, you know. If you get a fresh snow or rain, or you cut some track that's really fresh, you know, you can follow that track nice and slow, and you'll usually come up on them.
Yeah,
as long as they're not running.
I've used it plenty of times cutting track. That's actually a very back east tactic.
Yeah,
those guys that track deer in snow, they wait for the snow, and that's how they hunt, you know, every year. Matter of fact, I had Hal Blood on my show several years back. We're going to be doing a Throwback Thursday. We're going to be releasing episodes. I'm actually going to put that episode up. He talks about hunting elk in Montana that way, and he's a world famous deer tracker. That's like what he does, and he's
But there's some guys like you said, Arizona. Arizona just. You know, like you said, you may go the whole hunt and not get any weather. So
yeah,
we just don't get the weather that the other states get. So that's not really
common. Exactly.
Rely on. Not something you can rely on. Yeah. But it's good for, you know, if you're scouting or just want to find out where the elk are, if you start seeing a lot of fresh sign, then it's like, yeah, this is a good area to go ahead and still hunt. Like you said, just still hunt through those pines, and they're big animals. So, you know, you can usually come up on them, and especially if, like open pines, like you said, where you can get, you know, your visibility is out a couple hundred yards away. So
yeah, I feel like if you got that really thick stuff, like where that has like a lot of, you know, low oaks underneath the ponderosa, that's kind of hard to do. But
yeah,
when you have those, you know, where you can glass like 200 yards through the trees in front of you, I think you can have some success.
Yeah, and if you study your map and find out where those thickets are, they're usually in a drainage or something. You can usually maybe parallel it and hunt along the edge of it, hoping for, you know, a bull to be feeding on the edge of that timber. Because they do like a thick timber, you know, to not just for hiding, but to get out of the elements too, you know.
Yeah.
So they almost always have that thick cover somewhere close to them. I guess that pretty much goes with any time of year, but you know, they like it for those snowstorms and stuff too, if you're going to get some weather.
So you got a good late season elk story? I know you shared a little bit one with us earlier, but you got another one where kind of you learned something about hunting elk, or had some pretty interesting teaching points in it?
Yeah, you know, I just a few years ago, kind of talking about the time frame, you know, as far as like really utilizing your time. I had an area that I knew some bulls were in, and so I'd get in there pretty early in the afternoon, hike in there because it was about a mile in. So I'd hike in pretty early, and you know, so I was set up and, you know, early enough to start glassing. And so I was glassing around. I glassed up some smaller bulls, and I thought, you know, there's coming in, there was so much track and sign, a lot of bull tracks and stuff. I thought, you know, I'm gonna leave out of here, because I'd been going in and glass until dark and then walking out in the dark.
Okay.
So I did it for a couple times, and so I thought, you know, there's so much sign coming in here, I want to make sure I leave in plenty of time to hunt this on the way out and look into some of these different drainages and stuff, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, we started hiking out of there, and I didn't go a quarter of a mile, and boom, here's a nice 6-point, a couple hundred yards away, his feet on the hill. And I thought, you know, if I'd have stayed back in there glassing until dark, we would have never ran across that bull. We would have walked right by him in the dark.
Right.
So, yeah, I think I learned a lot about time. You know, just if you really find out where the elk are, just make sure you're not wasting time outside of those zones where you don't think there's elk, and to try to really utilize your time as far as being in the right, you know, in that zone where those elk are, because it could be 15 minutes when an elk comes out in the open, and that's it. You know, your hunt's over, especially in the evenings.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, awesome, man. I thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. Hopefully that gives some people some food for thought on these upcoming hunts here, and wish everybody success. Wish you success. You got you got clients? Did you tell me you had clients in 23 or no?
No, I've got a client coming up in unit one.
Oh, one. Okay. Oh, one's, yeah. One's a great late season, yeah. I think.
So, yeah, we'll see what the weather does. It's really been a different year, so.
Yeah. Well, if it's anything else like the rest of 2020, I'm sure it's going to be a curveball.
Yeah. Well, I guess after today, we're going to see if things are going to change, huh?
Let's see if we got to batten down the hatches for all the rioting that's going to happen. Who the hell knows? I don't know. There's so much speculation going on out there.
Yeah. So, well, good thing is we can go hunt still, so.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
You know, something really crazy doesn't happen. That's what my wife was saying. So I leave in a few days. She's like, I hope you can fly still. I'm like, well, I hope so too. I don't know. I'm going to South Dakota. I'm pretty sure it's not a spot there's going to be much rioting. So.
Yeah, I think but everybody's kind of holding their breath right now to see what's going to happen here.
But yeah, for sure.
Hope for the best.
I am. So, I've been praying. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, good luck on the rest of your hunts this year.
Yeah. Thank you. I really appreciate that. You too.
All right, John. Thanks a lot.
Take it easy.